नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। आत्मानं कन्यया ग्रस्तम् पञ्चालानरिदूषितान् दुरन्तचिन्तामापन्नो न लेभे तत्प्रतिक्रियाम्। Translation is proper by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When King Puranjana saw that all his family members, relatives, followers, servants, secretaries, and everyone else had turned against him, he certainly became very anxious. But he could not counteract the situation because he was thoroughly overwhelmed by Kalakanya. Purport: when a person becomes weak from the attack of old age, the family members, servants, and secretaries do not care for him. He is then unable to counteract this. Thus he becomes more and more anxious and laments his frightful condition. Hare Krishna. So, the allegory suggested through the whole narration of Puranjan is that, it's a conditioned living entity rotating in the material world, and this is a jiva approaches the moment of death in the material body, and here his senses, panchalas, the citizens of his city, are afflicted by diseases, various diseases that came about due to Kalakanya, daughter of time, old age, and he's very anxious because he cannot counteract this influence, overpowering influence, neither by medicines or by different healing mantras. You know, everything will eventually prove fruitless in front of Kalakanya, in front of the old age. Everything is destined to deteriorate. This is the nature of this material world. Annihilation takes place. There is a type of annihilation that is in the end of the universe, which is called pralaya, but there is different types of annihilation also, and the one that comes to mind is it's called nitya, an ongoing annihilation that goes on every moment. At every moment, every object of this world is getting actually annihilated. As Srila Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, somebody is 25 years old, that means that he is dying for the last 25 years. So that's the vision of Shastra Chakshu. It's not, oh, happy birthday. So here, this is the situation, and we have discussed a lot about this in the latest classes. However, in this verse, there's another point that comes, is that he is rejected by all his citizens, followers, servants, secretaries, and so on. So, although this is the part of allegory, it is also significant, because this is another truth of material existence, is that when person becomes useless for his family members, relatives, and so on, is when he's unable to provide them sense gratification. This is the basis of material relationship, exchange of sense gratification. So as it was explained in the previous purport, a person acquires a family in order to obtain sense gratification from them, but then in turn they also expect sense gratification from the head of the family. So this exchange is going on. So when the head of the family becomes unable to satisfy their desires, they turn indifferent toward him. Yeah, this is what happened. Even his wife, he also noted that his wife was becoming cold and indifferent. And then his sons, grandsons, servants and ministers were all gradually opposing him. So then they kind of understood this guy is useless. So why should we care for him? Yeah. So this is the situation. And why this happens? Because in material relationship, people interact in terms of your outer coverings. Not there is no relationship of the soul as such. Pure relationship, yeah, spiritual relationship, adhyatmika, yeah, which is based on the platform of atma. But there is a relationship of bodies, gross bodies or subtle bodies. And therefore, when those coverings, gross or subtle coverings, become they wear out, they become useless, then the relationship basically terminates, yeah, because it doesn't more yield fruit in terms of sense gratification. So, and then people don't care for you anymore. Once you become useless for them in terms of your being father or in terms of your being husband or in terms of your being a lover or whatever, or so-called friend, you know, or a boss or a servant, you know, if the relationship is based on interaction of the coverings of the soul, gross and subtle bodies, it becomes it terminates. So there is one relationship that still goes on even if one has been rejected by the world. Yeah? That relationship is there, the relationship between the soul and Krishna. Mm? And Krishna never gives up relating to us, even though he doesn't receive the amount of reciprocation expected. But due to his unconditional love for every living entity, Krishna never gives up on us. And this is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, sarvasya cha aham hridi sannivishto matah smritir gyanam apohanam cha, or even better, was that yantra rurhani mayaya. Yeah, the living entities they are situated in the machines, yeah, provided by material energy, and brahmayam sarva bhutani. So, and Krishna is there along with them, helping them to move about in this world. So Krishna never gives up, because Krishna is pure. Krishna sees the reality. He sees the substance. He sees the soul. He sees our actual self. And his love for us is unconditional. This means that he doesn't expect anything from us, yeah. He is detached, but at the same time, he loves us, and that love is causeless. It is not based on externals, upadhis. That's why that word is there. If you chant different prayers, you will find it often. Nirupadhi, nirupadhi, yeah. Without upadhis. What is an upadhi? Upadhi is a false quality. Imposed on some object, that is an upadhi. So the whole material world is based on upadhis, on certain, you know, false qualities imposed by people on themselves and on others too, you know. So but the pure relationships of spiritual world are not based on upadhis, yeah. They're not based on false qualities. So it is what we call natural, svabhavik, Yeah? Based on one's actual inner self, the nature of that inner self. This is why Krishna doesn't give us up. Krishna doesn't see the external transformation of the modes of nature that might be covering us. There's a nice verse which is quoted in the Padyavali by Rupa Goswami that exactly points to that vision of Krishna, how he sees different living entities, especially a devotee. So one poet, he states, Vyadhasya acharanam, where is the pious activities of a hunter, meaning the mrigari hunter? Did he have any? No. It's a rhetoric question. Dhruvasya chavayo, where's the maturity of Dhruva? Dhruva was, he wanted to revenge, he was a small 5-year-old boy, so he couldn't rationalize much, so he just, that was the impetus, I'll go to the forest and I'll get a better kingdom than my father. Dhruvasya chavayo, vidya gajendrasya ka, and where was the knowledge of Gajendra, who was basically an elephant? Then Kubjaya kimunama rupam adhikam. Was Kubja a beautiful lady? No. She was ugly. Trivakra, curved in 3 places, but not like Krishna. But in a slightly different, perverted way. Kim tat sudamno dhanam. And where was the wealth of Sudama? He didn't have any wealth. Poor. What did he bring to Krishna as a gift after years of separation? A handful of flat rice. That was a gift. But then Krishna said, "Oh, this is so wonderful. This can feed the whole universe," because he was pleased. And then, Vamshah ko vidurasya. Was Vidura of a noble birth? Not really. Well, it's kind of a 50-50, but it wasn't of pure breed Kshatriya. He was born of Shudrani. So some did consider him inferior due to that. A son of a maidservant. What did Duryodhana tell Vidura when he insulted him? Just son of a maidservant. Get away from this house. You're disturbing my plans. So, Yadava Pateru Ugrasya Kim Paurusham, and Ugrasena, the king of Yadavas, was he powerful? Was he powerful as a king? Not much. His son managed to overthrow him and put him in jail, and he wasn't powerful as a, he wasn't an ideal king in the sense of a kshatriya. But then, bhaktyatushyati kevalam nacha gunair bhakti priyo madhavaha. But Madhava, who is bhakti priya, who is lover of bhakti, he is satisfied simply by bhakti, and not by any nacha gunair, and not by any external qualities. And therefore, in order to specifically, in order to highlight this point, that poet chose those outstanding examples of different personalities who are able to please Krishna despite of their utter disqualification, seemingly utter disqualification. Kubja wasn't beautiful, Sudama wasn't rich, Vidura wasn't of a pure origin, and whatever other, or maturity, Dhruva wasn't mature, Gajendra was a dull animal externally. But then they were all able to please the Lord because of their devotional attitude, because they related to the Lord from the platform of the soul. And this is the relationship of the spiritual world. It is conducted on the platform of spirit. And this is how Krishna treats us all the time, but we don't relate to Krishna on that platform. But still, to relate to Krishna in the same way as he relates to us as spirit souls, this is the path of bhakti, of devotional service. And if we relate to Krishna from some another platform, from some another level, bhakti will be adulterated. It will be pure. It would be not pure. It will be mixed. To the degree and the degrees of mixture added will depend on the amount of upadis that you put around yourself when you relate to God. For example, a pure devotee relates to God from which perspective, from which level. A pure devotee, as described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he relates to Krishna as naham vipro na chanarapatir naapi vaishyo na shudro. I'm not a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya or shudra. Naham varani na chagrihapatir na vanastho yatirva. I'm neither brahmachari nor grihastha nor vanaprastha nor a sannyasi. Then who you are? So all the upadis mentioned, yeah. At least the Vedic upadis, you know, the numbers of upadis that you can add to that. And it's a good exercise. You can, if you don't know this verse, you can learn it. It's one of the four verses that Lord Chaitanya used to recite in front of Jagannath. Oh, so, it must be a special verse, yeah? And then during Ratha Yatra. So you can, it's an exercise, you can, before doing anything, before starting any devotional activity, you recite this verse. Because that will purify the whole activity by purifying your consciousness prior to that. Huh? That's why it is called Bhuta Shuddhi in Pancharatra, in the deity worship. You're supposed to recite this verse before starting your puja. Bhuta Shuddhi, Bhuta means existence. That you purify your existence, yeah? Purify your entity before starting, and then who you are, and then you can mentally also add the identity you are most attached to, and say I'm not that too, I'm not that too. No, if your favorite activity is to do some, you know, then you. You know, okay, I'm a Sanskrit translator. I'm not a Sanskrit translator. but I'm a pujari. You're not a pujari. I'm not a pujari. Who you are? You are, kintu prodyan nikhila paramananda purna amrita abdher gopi bhartuv padakamalayor dasa dasa anudasaha. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of, the maintainer of the gopis. Of the lotus feet of the maintainer of the gopis, who is what? Who is Pradyan Nikhila Paramananda Purnamrita Abdhehe, who is an ocean full of ever rising nectar, yeah? supreme bliss. So this is Krishna. He is an ocean of nectar of ever increasing supreme bliss, and my identity is that I am the servant of his servant of his servant of his servant, and therefore my activity is whatever pleases him, regardless of externals. This is the essence of the activity, to please the senses of Krishna. And if Krishna is pleased, if I with this service or with that service, with another service, you know, that will be my preference. How I can please Krishna more. So we, in order to purify our activities in devotional service, we should meditate on this truth, on our original position, uncovered by any external upadhis. And then only devotional service will be actually on the level of bhakti, unalloyed, pure bhakti, parabhakti, not any kind of mishra. You take it as jnana mishra or karma mishra. All kinds of mishras can be there, but then we are after pure bhakti. We are supposed to be after pure devotional service, which means enacted on the platform of Brahma Bhuta. Yeah, that is our aspiration, to become pure devotees, which means to be free from any other motivation. So purification of devotional service is our agenda, and we have to endeavor for that at every moment. And Krishna's devotees, they also reflect different qualities of Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of all auspicious qualities. And his pure devotees, they reflect his various auspicious qualities. And so, in the same way as Krishna relates to every living being in the most pure way, overlooking various upadhis, various external shells, yeah. In the same way, his devotees too, his pure devotees, they too relate to living entities in a way with their sharp vision. They are able to see through all those upadhis. Never mind the amount of upadhis that a person might fence himself with. You know, a pure devotee will relate to a jiva, not to a brahmana, not to a kshatriya, not to a general manager, or not to a any kind of a sweeper on the street. He will relate to the soul, yeah. And because their vision is free from the modes of nature. This is what contaminates our vision. You have filters, the projector. You know, you put a yellow filter, you have yellow light. So, depending on the influence of either a mode of ignorance or passion or goodness, you see people in a different way. So that vision is pure because etadishana mishasya prakritisthona tad gunair yatna yujyate tadatmastir yathabuddhis tadashraya. So the comparison is drawn in the first canto. Just like Krishna, even though coming into this material world, he's not affected by the three modes of nature. In the same way, the intelligence of those who have taken full shelter of Krishna is unaffected by the modes of nature. Yathabuddhis tadashrayat. And this is tadashraya, this is the cause. This is the reason why their vision is pure, because they have taken full shelter of Krishna. So therefore devotees are pure in that way. They always see the value in each living entity. You know, even if a living entity will be totally in a materially very degraded condition, worthy of neglect, in an ordinary, you know, situation, a devotee will not do so. Because the devotee understands this is merely a material covering, having nothing to do with the actual essence of a person, actual jiva, atma. So and therefore the society of devotees is non-envious. Yeah, it's non-envious, and therefore it is so nice to be. It is so nice to stay with devotees. Because you feel their love. You feel the loving relationships between the Vaishnavas in this way. They don't treat you as in terms of your upadhis. They treat you as a living entity. And this is what we are actually thirsty after. In this material world, that everybody treats us in every other way possible. When somebody treats you in an actual loving way, you become so touched by these dealings. You feel this exchange. You feel that these exchanges are causeless, in a sense. Nobody expects from you anything. So this is what attracts. This is how devotees attract by their dealings, by their wonderful qualities. So, and even if we are not able to exhibit that, we should strive for that. In a Vaishnava society, dealing with accepting every person as a living spiritual soul, a particle of Krishna, a receptacle of compassion, love, and friendship, and then Madhyamadhikari, he. Is advised to show compassion to the foolish and ignorant, and make friendship with devotees, and upeksha, and to show to avoid the envious. It doesn't have to hate them. It doesn't have to make war with them. It has to avoid them. So so seems like Puranjana didn't have that chance, didn't have that fortune, because all his relationships were based on body, and therefore everybody around him, they gave him up because he became useless for them. So we should try our best to purify our consciousness, and because another point is there, that in relationship to Krishna, in the discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Rai, this was actually the underground, the kind of underlying theme of the discussion, at least the first part of the discussion. Coming to the actual platform of spiritual relationship with Krishna. Yeah, and then the suggested answers, the answers suggested by Ramananda Rai were all based on some kind of upadhi. Yeah, if you actually analyze, starting with varnashrama, then going on to tyaga to renunciation, then karma, jnana, everything was mentioned. Everything was mentioned through different verses. Yeah, sarva dharman parityajya, then there was brahma bhuta prasannatma. There was also yat karoshi yadashnasi. But then ultimately the discussion came to the point where, so Lord Chaitanya kept on saying, this is external, speak something more, this is external, speak something more. External, why is external? External to the soul. External to what? External to the soul, external to jiva. You know? Because neither bodily identifications, even if civilized, still, they are bodily identifications, or fruitive results, or mental speculation. This is all external to the soul. It is not the soul's actual nature. One may purify all that by offering, by dovetailing it with devotional service. But ultimately, after being purified, one gives it up as an external thing. And it came to the point of the verse spoken by Brahma in the 10th canto, which Lord Chaitanya accepted. He said this, I accept this, yeah, but you can elaborate more on this. So he didn't say, if this is external, speak something more. He said, I accept this, now please elaborate. And the elaboration went on and on and on, describing various relationships with Krishna, up to the point of conjugal relationship. But this all was based on that verse, jnana prayasam udapasya namanta eva. Anyway, the meaning of that is, one should give up all endeavors for speculative knowledge, for understanding God through one's logic. Then, and one should simply, jivanti sammukharitam bhavadiya vartam. One should simply worship the katha spoken by pure devotees. And one should do that regardless of where one is situated in the world. Sthane sthita. Don't be too much preoccupied what you are, you know, but be preoccupied with who you are. Shruti gatam tanuvan manobhyar. And worship. Worship this Krishna katha with your body, with your words, and with your mind. In other words, you always try to do something for Krishna. Let's try to speak something about Krishna and try to always remember Krishna. The body, words and mind. So this is very powerful, because the result of that is the Achyuta, Lord, who is known as Achyuta, unconquerable, becomes conquered. Even though nothing else can conquer the Lord in the three worlds, a devotee who is situated in the above described way, he conquers the Lord because he is humble, and humility is the platform where devotional service can be accommodated. You know, is the vessel for bhakti. Sthane sthita shruti gatam tanuvan manobhir ye prayasho jita jito pyasitais trilokyam. So this was the standard accepted by Lord Chaitanya, the standard of pure devotional service, unmixed with any kind of upadhi, fruitive expectation of fruitive result, or mental speculation. That really reflects the essence of bhakti. The essence of bhakti is not as much as the essence of bhakti is the offering and not the external, you can say the external shape of it. Yeah? It's the offering, it's the loving offering that conquers Krishna. And therefore we have to remember this, and therefore we have to repeat and read it and hear it again and again, so that our devotional service can become more pure, because there's no limit to purity, yeah. And it takes some time to purify one's bhakti from all kinds of designations. Yeah? The way we relate to Krishna will be the way we relate to all other living entities around us. So if we relate to Krishna, if we perform our devotional service from the pure platform, then all other living entities will automatically then our relationship with all other living entities will be also appropriate and pure. And if we relate to Krishna in an impure way, if there is some contamination, then there will be also some contamination, some upadhi that it will stand between us and others, other devotees or other living beings. So that is important. So Krishna consciousness means pure relationships. Because if the relationship is not pure, there can't be rasa. And if there is no rasa, it cannot feed the soul. It cannot satisfy the soul. Rasa. And spiritual world is rasa. Spiritual world, rasovai saha. Rasam hevayam labdhanandi bhavati. And attaining this rasa, one becomes blissful. So rasa is based on purity, yeah? Spiritual rasa. It's based on that purity. Hare Krishna. So if you have any questions or any comments, it's not on.
I want to ask, what is the happiness of the spiritual world as compared to the happiness which we seek in the material world?
What is the... Okay. So what differentiates the two?
How is it higher means... I just want to know how great the happiness is in the spiritual world.
Well, it's endless. And everything in the material world has an end. That's kind of you can give a generic reply to that question. It's endless. Yeah, now we can pose another question. Why is it endless? Then we get into philosophy. Why is it endless? Relationships in the spiritual world produce endless happiness. And anything in the material world is temporary. Therefore, they are not the sources of happiness. This is in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yehi sansparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. The intelligent people, they don't take part in the so-called happiness that is produced from the contact of the senses and their objects, because such happiness is dukkha yoni. It's the birthplace of misery, because adyantavanta, because it has adi and anta, because it has a beginning and an end. It's a beginning and an end. And this is not enacted on a... It is illusory. That is why it is miserable. If you are hungry, and I'll bring you an album full of pictures from the last Janmashtami feast, and also see last year we had such wonderful, you know, you can enjoy. And then I'll keep on flipping the pages and see what comes more, are sweets, you know, just see the sweets. So you won't be satisfied, you need something real, real, substantial, something of a substance, vastava, vastava matra vastu. This is what Bhagavatam gives us, it gives us the substance. Nothing of reflection, nothing of reflections. So when we get the substance, then we are satisfied. And then we naturally give up the reflections, the illusory reflections. So, this is what I can say. Yeah, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned that things should be done with purity and the vessel of humility. Is that something that's mustered up by our mind, our intelligence? Is that something that's naturally there? And how does one, you know, exhibit? I mean, is this something you'd have to try to do? Do something purely with humility? It's a mental exercise.
Is humility a mental exercise? it can be, or it can be naturally awakened. Actually, in my experience, humility which is exercised mentally doesn't last. you may kind of in some situations you'll be full of pride, but externally you may behave in a humble way. But it doesn't go inside, and then you still, your spirit is still, you know, upright, and you're not ready to bow down in your heart. And but natural humility, I mean, I guess it's there. It is eternally with the soul. It is an inseparable characteristic of the soul. It's just that it is covered, and it might require some degree of you know, intellectual deliberation, some degree of maybe a little philosophizing, like to convince your rebellious mind why should you be humble. But then from that it should spring to the natural humility. It should squeeze out the drops of that natural humility. Otherwise, the whole thing will be a pretense. You know, so somehow or other, in devotional service, years after years, Krishna takes the devotee, and Krishna takes the devotee through different situations, different experiences in life that kind of naturally make you humble, and naturally make you realize your insignificance, you know. And this school of life that Krishna takes his devotees through is very, very, it's paying off in the shape of full-hearted surrender, in the shape of total dependence on the Lord, you know. And that doesn't require any kind of a mental or intellectual, you know, kind of a kickstart or whatever. You know? So I guess this is the key to develop natural humility, is to just stay on in the mission of Lord Chaitanya, in the association of his devotees, trying your best to follow the instructions of your spiritual master. You just keep on doing it, and then it will manifest all auspicious qualities in your heart with time. Because after all, this is the quality of bhakti, as described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that is Shubhada. It destroys first Klesha, Gni, destroys the miseries, and then Shubhada manifests all auspicious qualities in one. So one just has to as much as possible, sincerely stick to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and Vaishnavas, and everything will be gradually manifest. So,
Hare Krishna. Just a comment on the question. There was a story in the early days, and there was this one devotee. So whenever Srila Prabhupada would come to give the class, so he would be coming from his apartment, he's going to the temple room, 26 Second Avenue. So everybody was bowing down. There is one devotee. He does not want to do it. So it happens many, many times. And finally, one time, Prabhupada asked him, why are you not bowing down? The devotee says, well, I don't feel like doing it. So why should I do it? Prabhupada says, you do it in the beginning, and then later on, the emotions, the real humility will follow. So what we're doing here, we may not have that real humility right now. However, we have to bow down to the Lord, or we have to bow down to the devotees, and eventually that real love will come. In the beginning, if we don't want to do it, because we say, oh, it's artificial, it will not come. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.
Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.